Welcome to this conversation. I'm your host, Teresa Keller. My guest today is somebody who is going to blow your socks off. Her name is Debbie Antonelli. If I do a full introduction, the show will be over. She is a college basketball analyst for ESPN, Big Ten networks, the major networks, CBS, Fox, ABC. You hear her on WNBA games. She's known for her play-by-play with the Indiana Fever. She is in the Women's Basketball Hall of Fame, and she is our guest today on this conversation. Welcome, Debbie Antonelli.
Thank you so much for having me.
Well, it's a pleasure to talk to you. I know you're in the car. People will have to understand that we're not having studio quality, but to be able to talk to somebody like you is a gift. And I'm sure that people are wondering, why in the world is a person of this stature a guest on this conversation? The reason is because I became a fan of a young man on the Emory and Henry men's basketball team. His name is Patrick Antonelli. Want to tell us about him?
I'd love to tell you about him. He's the youngest of my three boys. He was the point guard at Emory and Henry for almost 4 years. He did have a redshirt year, but he's a wonderful young man who had an incredible experience at Emory and Henry, and we're so proud of him and all the things that he has done. And we're grateful to Emory and Henry for all the things they did for Patrick.
And what Patrick did for Emory and Henry men's basketball. Do you want to tell us? I don't know if you can describe or define the contribution that he made, but he was a spark plug on that team, from my view.
I say to people, I can give you the mom version or I can give you the coach version. I prefer to give the mom version first because I think this speaks to the character and the quality of a young man he has grown into. He is smart and handsome, and he's very well liked. He's an excellent teammate. And when I sent him off to Emory and Henry, I just said to the coach, we don't have to have any conversation about basketball regarding Patrick unless he's not a good teammate or he doesn't work hard. He'll take care of the rest of it. And he did. The coach version of it would be he can make every play going left or right. He's got range. He can read the second level and into the third level. And he's a 5'11 guy with curly hair with a 40-inch vertical jump. So he can play a major role in a lot of different ways to help somebody win. And that's what he cares about, is winning. That's the most important thing to him, and being a good teammate. And he did those things.
And we're going to get to you, Debbie Antonelli, because you're the feature of this conversation. But your son, Patrick, also got hurt. I mean, I loved watching him. He was all those things. To watch that relatively short young man jump the way he could jump and the way he led that team, but then he had really kind of an unfortunate ending to the season.
It was a very tough blow for him. I mean, he had a couple of injuries. One is early in the season, he got back in transition and jumped at the rim to defend, to wall up, and a guy led with his elbow, not intentionally. It was just a basketball play that landed on Patrick's face and involved three teeth, and we're still trying to save him. But he recovered from that and survived from that after minor surgery to get him ready to get back on the court. And He had played all last year with a partially torn labrum, and he did not want to get surgery in the offseason. He wanted to rehab so he could play. He didn't want to lose the year. And then December 11th, I was there, and he got his shoulder dislocated again. So that was it, because that was multiple times that his shoulder had popped out. So he had surgery. He has recovered very nicely from surgery since early December, and we're really proud of him and what he's been able to do in his rehab. So he did lose the chance to play, but he did get the redshirt year. So with the COVID year, he does have 2 years of eligibility remaining.
So is there a chance that we'll see him on the court again next fall?
We anticipate him playing. He certainly wants to play. I'm not sure where he will play. As you know, Emory and Henry is in transition right now on the men's side. So we're trying to make some decisions about that. He's in the portal right now, but we'll graduate on May 4th. And we'll see how it goes.
And it's my personal delight to have gotten to watch him on the court. And then when I got to meet you, thanks to an introduction by our former women's basketball coach, Joy Scruggs, I just remember a conversation one time like, do you know who Patrick's mother is? And I really didn't. And how impressive. And I don't know where to begin except to say just a couple of things. You're in the Women's Basketball Hall of Fame. I thought this was very interesting when you research you on the internet. One of the things that it says is that over a 30-year career, you have a 93% free throw percentage. So I don't know why you keep one going for 30 years, but you're obviously still involved in basketball. Let's go back to the beginning. Where did your basketball story begin?
I've had 36 years on the air broadcasting, so I've had an incredible career, which I absolutely love. The 94% is my five-year average from the free throw line for my fundraiser for Special Olympics. We are getting ready to get into year six of our fundraiser, which will be May 18 and 19. I make 100 free throws on the top of every hour for 24 hours. So at the end of 24 hours, I've made 2,400 free throws. I do this to raise money for Special Olympics. In 5 years, we have raised over $860,000. This year, I plan to pass $1 million. I know it sounds crazy, but the 94% is my cumulative average of my 5 years of shooting in the driveway. So the fitness that comes with doing this is very challenging. I do receive AARP mail, so it's not getting easier to do. But it's definitely worth it because we're going to cross $1 million, and I couldn't be more grateful to all the people in our circle that have helped make that happen.
Everything with you is a dramatic story of achievement, but your connection with Special Olympics, I assume, has to do with your middle son, Frankie Antonelli, who was born with Down syndrome. I read an incredible profile about you and your family and your son, Frankie, and when he was born, the negativity that you were presented with and how you and your husband dug down deep and said, this is not an unhappy story. This is going to be a story of success and achievement. Tell us about Frankie.
Well, Frankie is a young man living with Down syndrome. He graduated from Clemson in the Clemson Life Program. Life is an acronym. Learning is for everyone. And it is a post-secondary experience for students with intellectual disability. He had a full college experience. His classes were non-traditional classes, more life skills classes. But he was able to navigate independent living. He lives independently at Clemson with a roommate and with support. And he's working two jobs. He loves his community and the family that he has created up there with all the graduates of the Clemson Life Program. And all the support around Clemson for entertaining this program. And he's doing remarkably well. Yes, at the beginning, there were many challenges and obstacles to overcome, but we decided that we were going to try to figure out what Frankie could do and enhance those things. And through the IEP process and all the different challenges that we faced, we just tried to find a way. I treated it like I was the head coach, and we had a team around them, and everybody had to play their role. And if they didn't play their role to help the team, then they might get cut. And we did cut some people. As a matter of fact, it wasn't my choice, but two teachers and a bus driver were fired because they didn't do their jobs. And I never felt bad about that 1 minute because that was their choice. So we've had a list of things that have been good and bad, but we've seen a lot of good. Frankie is a byproduct of a lot of people in the village that have helped us help him be the best he could be.
You took your job in raising him to be, I think if I understood you correctly, to be the head coach, and everybody involved had their roles to play. But it was a struggle for awareness and for positive attitudes. People didn't just automatically come along with your program.
I had to fight a lot, and there's some fights I'd rather not share because they weren't nice. But the most important thing to me was an attitude of willingness. If you were willing, it didn't matter what acronyms came before or after your name, but if you had a willingness to try to help and give Frankie an opportunity to do what he can do and not hold him back and not limit him. And we were realistic about it as parents. I'd never put him in a position where I didn't think he could be successful. And that allowed him to build confidence, and Special Olympics was a big part of that. And that's part of the reason why we do the fundraiser, because I want to help other families like ours understand the value of sport. And you can have intellectual disability or not. Sport is still going to play a role in helping you no matter what you do as a part of a team. Really proud of what Frankie has been able to achieve. We really miss him being that far away from us at Clemson, but he's having his best life.
I think there was a pretty dramatic moment along the way where you had to make a choice about how you were going to handle it, and that it was connected to one of your former coaches.
When Frankie was born, we didn't know he had Down syndrome, and it was quite shocking. I didn't handle it as well as probably I would have if I had known or not. It was just no preparation at all for us. So, you know, we had had our older son, Joey. He was 2.5 years old, and he was healthy, and we didn't have any issues. I had no issues in pregnancy, no indicators at all to think that there might be something that was different. It took me a while. And then the story, as I like to share, it has to do with my coach, Kay Yao, who I had a 30-year relationship with as a camper and a player. And of course, my professional career in broadcasting, she had something to do with that in teaching me the game. And we were at the 1998 Final Four in Kansas City. NC State had played in the Final Four. But in 1998, I was at a basketball game. I went to this game. I set my stuff down at press row. I went up to say hello to somebody in the stands. And when I came back, it was by fate that Coach Al happened to be sitting right next to me. They had played the night before in the semifinals of the Final Four and lost by a significant amount. So it was pretty devastating. She was asking me how I was doing, and I said I was doing fine. And then she said, "No, really, how are you doing?" And then I told her I was having a hard time. 9 months in, I wasn't quite sure what we were dealing with. I didn't quite understand what was coming forward and how things were going to work out for us. And I mean, it was a conversation that lasted the entire game. But basically, what Coach Al said was, you know, I've been finding out you have a child with special needs. It's very similar to finding out that you have cancer. And she had a 3-year battle with breast cancer. She said, you're not ready. You didn't know it was coming. And then at some point you got to put a game plan together. And she said, that's what I did with cancer. And that's what I'm expecting you to do and being the best mom that you can be for Frankie. So she said, first people nurse the hurt, you're mad or angry that it happened to you and you ask why. And then you rehearse looking for empathy. And then at some point you reverse. And when you reverse it, that's where you draw that line in the sand and you make a choice. That changed my whole attitude, that conversation. I decided that she was right. I wanted to be the best mom I could be. And I have learned from so many great teachers and leaders around the game, inside the men and the women's game. I've been around some of the best coaches that there has ever been in our sport. And I just took from them, each one of them, and tried to apply some of the practices that maybe they had applied with their teams and use that to build our team around Frankie. I had a chance to, you know, use what I had learned on the floor through basketball, whether it was leadership or communication or just how to deal with teammates. Obviously, I had played on multiple teams, but now you're coming at it from a different standpoint as the head coach. Once Frankie got to seventh grade is when I realized there were post-secondary experiences. I pretty much threw out the old IEP process, wrote my own IEP, and told everyone on our team, this is what we need for him to be able to go to college. And he should have the same opportunity to be prepared like all of the other students that were in the school. And that's the effort that we moved towards, because they weren't willing or didn't believe or didn't think he was capable. And if they weren't going to change their mind and they didn't have an attitude of willingness, then I was going to cut them. And that's what I did.
My guest today is Debbie Antonelli. She is big time in the world of college basketball broadcasting with all of the top networks. She's in the Women's Basketball Hall of Fame. We've gotten connected to her through her wonderful son, Patrick Antonelli, who played for Emory and Henry. And we hope to see him again on the courts at Emory and Henry. And she's talking to us about her Down syndrome son, Frankie, who is living independently in large part because of the choice that Debbie made and the plan that she made for his success. Debbie, if I understand correctly, it was in that process, Frankie is the goal and his success is the goal. In that time period where you made the commitment to broadcasting, is that correct?
Well, when Frankie was born, at first I thought I was going to have to quit. I didn't know what our life was going to be like moving forward. And I actually thought that I might be home taking care of our son because we weren't capable and we didn't know what was coming. But my husband encouraged me to continue because he was very much of the mindset that we were going to continue to live our life and we were going to figure it out as we went and not stop and halt everything that we're doing anticipating what we think or assume what we think could happen. So I was able to stay on the air and continue to work games. That was my passion. And it really, putting me in the gym and putting me around the game is what I've always loved and what I've always done. And it helped pull me out of, you know, the struggles that I was having. And it really helped me. So once again, basketball is such an incredible source of resolve and persistence and hard work and sweat equity and all those things. And I just figured out to apply those things to how we could help Frankie. And I stuck with it. And I'm glad I did, because we have been able to raise three boys around a career with a mom who travels all the time. And we've been able to figure it out. And I'm grateful, especially with some extra effort on our part when you have someone that needs a little extra like Frankie needed.
I'd like for you to just give us a little bit of the detail. I can't even imagine the schedule that you keep of traveling. I know that you, according to what I read, you broadcast 1 to 3 games a week in the middle of basketball season, and those games are probably not all likely in one town. What is your travel schedule like?
You know, I joke around and say I really don't like to tell people how much I'm gone, because I don't want to lose my mother of the year status. but I seem to figure out a way to gain it back once college basketball slows down a little bit, but then the WNBA picks back up. I have somewhere, you know, I've done over 100 games in different years. This year I'm going to be closer to 90 to 100 games once the WNBA is over. Now that the guys are older and all gone and we're empty nesters, it's much easier in some ways than it was before. But I like to say, you know, I've never really have a day off, and I'm not really looking for one either. There's so much to be done and so much work that takes place. Right before the taping of this interview, I was trying to catch up on the NC State Duke men's game that played in the Elite Eight, because I had not seen that. I was working the men's and the women's tournament and myself in other places, so I haven't had a chance to watch our NC State guys play. It's constantly basketball all the time, mixed in right now this time of year, preparing and getting in shape and fitness for my fundraiser. I have 3 weeks of girls only sports camp coming up this summer. And so it's quite a bit of being the CEO of our own little brand right here, and just trying to do the best we can to serve our community in ways that we have a unique platform to do so. And as long as I'm healthy enough and have the desire to do so, I really don't need a day off, you know. But back then, Lynn, you know, I could be gone for 3 weeks. I could have 14 games and 16 nights in 14 different states. I mean, there are portions of my schedule when the kids were younger that where I was doing that. There were a lot of times where I might fly home in the morning and fly back out that night, get home, get them off the school bus, get them dinner, change out my suitcase, and go right back to the airport. It's not something that sounds like Mother of the Year material. That's why I don't like to share it that much. But we always figured out a way to do it. I was always able to have someone at the house. We never had to put our kids in daycare. That was our choice. It cost us more money to do it that way, especially when, you know, we were working parents trying to keep our careers going and support our kids. So, you know, it took a village, that's for sure. But it was really important to me that I was visible to make sure he was being taken care of and getting what he needed.
Debbie, let me review your history. You obviously were a gifted athlete. You played in college at NC State. You went on and got a master's degree. You got training in marketing. And then the story I'm not clear on, you were somewhere and you were trying to get just basic broadcast coverage of women's basketball. You had to fight for that because it was not happening. It was just women, and who cared about that? You made that happen, and you had to do your own play-by-play. Is that how that worked?
You know, when I was in grad school at Ohio University, we had to do an internship, which I did mine at the University of Kentucky. And in athletics, which is a much different time in college athletics now than it was 30-plus years ago, when I was at Kentucky, there was one AD in charge of marketing and fundraising. He had a secretary, and then I was the intern, and that was the department at the University of Kentucky. And then after my internship was finished, I was able to get a full-time job as the first director of marketing and athletics at the University of Kentucky. I was 23, and I was the director of marketing and athletics at Kentucky. And then the local cable company came to us in Lexington and said, we think we can produce sport. We're not sure. And we said, well, why don't you try a women's basketball game? And they said, we would love to. And that's where I got my broadcasting start. I stayed at Kentucky for a total of 4 years, and then I left to take the job at The Ohio State University as the director of marketing and athletics there. I was 27 when I got that job. And when I got that job as the director of marketing, I went to the local cable company in Columbus, and I asked them if they could produce sport. And they thought they could. And I said, well, let's do women's basketball. Tell me what it would cost to produce 8 women's basketball games. And I think back then the number was like 50,000. So I don't think you could do one game for 50,000 today. But I went out as the director of marketing, sold the inventory and the advertising, put the network together, hired a play-by-play guy, and I was the analyst. And we did that for 4 years. That really helped launch my broadcasting career, because then I started to pick up some regional work with the Fox affiliates. And that helped me continue to expand my broadcasting career while I was the director of marketing and athletics. At the same time, our flagship station in Ohio State Athletics was WBNS Radio. And there was a 50 statewide syndicated radio network across Ohio, West Virginia, into the western part of Pennsylvania. And the contract that the university had was, if you wanted Ohio State football, you had to take half the men's basketball games. Now, think about this. It's still early 90s. I was kind of shocked that you only had to take half the men's games, but there was nothing there about the women. So I went back to them and I talked to them about the contract and said, hey, I think you need to add half the women's games to this contract, because that's the only thing that I thought would be fair and equitable. And we did. So what that did is allowed us to have half the Ohio State women's games on our syndicated football network. They could choose whatever half they wanted. I didn't care what games they broadcast, as long as they broadcast half of them. We put the affiliate agreements together, and they were able to sell inventory. And we had a 55-station affiliated statewide radio network for Ohio State women's basketball in the early and mid-90s. There are still some schools today that don't have even one affiliate to carry their women's basketball games. So I thought that was groundbreaking. That's a subtle thing that nobody really talks about. But combined with the TV and the radio, Ohio State at the time was a leader in marketing on the women's side. And of course, marketing and branding is such a hot topic right now because we have Caitlin Clark and Clarkonomics in our game. But back then, that's what I was doing to help advance our game at the same time, handling my job as director of marketing and doing as many broadcasts as I could do in that area. And then after our first son was born, that's when my full-time career launched in broadcasting. And I resigned my position at Ohio State so that I could concentrate on that.
Debbie Antonelli, how did you get to be so good? You just started off just doing it, just broadcasting, but now you're good enough that you're in demand at the highest levels of network broadcasting. How did you learn? What did you learn?
I worked. I watched film. I studied. I listened to others. I mimicked those that I thought from good habits, not on the air what they were saying, but I listened to what the trends were. I studied the game. I was constantly working on the game. I'm constantly working on my knowledge and my understanding. I have to be an expert on the rules. And I started putting myself in positions that people saw me. They saw how hard I worked. They listened to what I said on the air. They heard there was an effort there. I wasn't just showing up and just winging it. I had some depth to what I say. I try to give 2 or 3 really clear reasons as to how and why things happen. Over 30 plus years, I have incredible relationships on the men and the women's side. And I've worked really hard to put myself in a position where when they see me, they know that I'm going to be fair, I'm going to be prepared, and I'm going to have fun. And if every coach in the business recognizes that about me, then I think that I have done what I've needed to do to put myself in the right spots so that I can advance my own broadcasting career and advance those of the young ones coming up. There were no women calling games except for Ann Myers and Mimi Griffin. Those are the only people I ever saw. And I didn't even see Ann Myers until later into the late 90s. But that's where our game was. And I thought our game, I've always believed our product has been good. Our game has always been good. We just never had enough eyes on it. And I felt an incredible passion to help make that happen.
And that has really changed the women's Final Four. I believe, if I'm saying this right, the NCAA Women's Final Four with Caitlin Clark set an all-time record for viewership and kind of turned the page on appreciation for women's basketball. Three more questions, and we need to wrap things up. You talked about Frankie and Down syndrome and the fact that he's living independently and that amazing story. We didn't hear the story of your oldest son, Joey, and what he's doing.
Joey graduated from South Carolina with a degree in sports administration or sports management. And then he got his master's degree from Wittenberg University in Springfield, Ohio. And he currently works at Wittenberg University in athletic facilities and events. And he started his college athletic career. So he's doing really well. Frankie's at Clemson. He's doing well. And Patrick's trying to figure it out after graduation on May 4th.
Yeah. And so the question that I didn't ask that I just always want to know about most everybody, how did Patrick find Emory and Henry?
I'm working the ACC women's tournament, and our stat guy is a guy, I'll just say Mike, and Mike knew several coaches, and he asked me what Patrick was doing. We had been friends over the years, and obviously he had followed Patrick through our conversations, and he said he knew somebody named Ben Thompson. When Ben and I spoke the first time, I gave him the same, same thing I said at the top of the show. I can give you the mom version. I can give you the coach version. Which one do you want first? And I also told him that Patrick had barely started shaving, so I knew he was going to grow. And I think something after Ben saw him and met him and saw that that Patrick would be a really good fit. I'd never been on campus until the day we moved him in. And Frank, my husband, had taken him on his recruiting trip. And we really liked everything about it. So it worked out great because Patrick did have a good, really good 4 years there.
Well, and he has made Emory and Henry better, and I hope that he benefited as well. When I called you, I had gotten your phone number from Joyce Scruggs, called you. You answered the phone. You sounded like you were in the middle of a tornado or in the middle of a basketball game. You schedule things immediately. You are in the car traveling while we're doing this conversation. And I'm just wondering, where have you been and where are you going? And do you have any view of any few hours off in your near future?
Along with Patrick, we are coaching a JV girls team this summer. Patrick has always been interested and wants to coach. And so I have a program here called Team Best. We have a 5th, 6th, 7th, 8th, 9th grade girls basketball teams. We've had 3 practices, and then we played 4 games. We won all 4, so we won the division that we were in. Girls after thought they did a really nice job. I'm actually headed home for 2 nights. I have a speaking engagement in Greenville, North Carolina on Thursday. I'll be in Asheville, North Carolina the following Monday and Tuesday. And I just keep traveling. I won't be home till May 5th after Patrick graduates.
As Debbie Antonelli says, she's not looking for a day off. It sounds like there's not one in her future. It is our great honor to talk to you, Debbie Antonelli, even while you're in the car traveling from games to home and in your vortex of activity. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you for inviting me.
Debbie Antonelli, Women's Basketball Hall of Fame, college basketball analyst, and our guest on this conversation. You can hear this conversation Wednesdays at 6, Sundays at 2 here on 90.7. And you can find us on our podcast. Just look for WEHC podcast, This Conversation. Thank you once again, Debbie. Thank you above all to the listeners. And please stay tuned, everybody, to this fine station.